Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast with Sharon Lecter. Today, I'm excited to introduce a serial entrepreneur, Stephen Sashen. He's never had a job, which I think that's fantastic. We're going to hear more about that. Former professional comic, stand-up comic, and award-winning screenwriter. Competitive sprinter. I love that one. He said that he was one of the fastest men over 55. And I love this little in parens, maybe the fastest 55 plus Jew in the world. I love that. That's fantastic. And he and his wife co-founded the footwear company called Zero Shoes. And I love it. Creating a movement. I love that. And he's helped hundreds of thousands of people live life feet first. Say that fast. Live life feet first with happy, healthy, strong feet and addictively comfortable shoes, sandals, and boots. And he and his wife were on Shark Tank, and they actually turned down an offer from the one and only Kevin O'Leary. Welcome, Stephen. So excited to have you here.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited to be here. Do you know that you, in certain ways, changed our lives, my wife and mine?
No, I don't. Please share. Well,
the short version of this is not like, you know, millions of other people. I got turned on to all the rich dad stuff way back when. But the thing that was the real life changer was when we were playing cash flow. And there's two parts of this. Part one is the first time we were playing. After we played, someone said to my wife, you know, how'd it go? And she goes, not really well. And they said, how come? She goes, well, I just, you know, wasn't getting good cards. And they said, so are you always such a victim? And she was offended by that. I mean, just offended by that. Well, the next day we played again. And I was just thinking, okay, if I wasn't limited by the cards I was drawing or anything else, then what? And I realized there was a loophole in the game. And I'll tell you what it is if you ask, but let me just cut to the chase. When I realized what the loophole was, I and everyone I was playing with were able to win the game in less than one move. And my wife was in a different part of the game, in a different phase, and she heard what we did and then figured out her version of that. And we both sort of, you know, won the game instantly. And that sort of thinking allowed us to then do some very clever things, some real estate investing and some other stuff that allowed us to be effectively retired from 2000 to 2009. So I've always been an out of the box thinker and like to find loopholes, but seeing it in that perspective where I've always been, since I was a kid, interested in financial independence, financial freedom, but seeing the sort of application, if you will, in that context, really opened up some doors in my brain. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I actually like to start with talking about the little Stephen and sharing a little bit about what your dreams and visions were. And so you were already interested in, you were an entrepreneur at a young age, sounds like. So tell us a little bit more about little Stephen.
Well, my first job was polishing my dad's boots and shoes. And so it was 25 cents for a pair of shoes, 50 cents for a pair of boots. And amazingly, his boots and shoes needed to be polished all the time. And he was a bit of a shoe whore. So it kept me busy. But that was thing number one. And then I think my second job arguably was figuring out the combination of his piggy bank and trying to surreptitiously steal quarters, which when I was in my 50s, he revealed that he knew all along that I was doing that. And he just let me, which I thought was adorable. And then my third job, and this is what kind of led me to never having a job, was when I was 12, I got into doing magic. And then by the time I was maybe I guess I didn't start doing things. No, I did things professionally starting from the time I was about 14, 13 or 14. I was doing kids' birthday parties. And then I became a street performer. And just this whole idea of doing things that I liked and making a living doing that, it wasn't really a conscious thing, but it was obvious that I was never going to have a job from that moment on.
So you say, we talk about you being a serial entrepreneur. So tell us a few of your ventures prior to Zero Shoes.
I invented what became the industry standard word processing software for film and television writers. I developed a meditation course that we were selling and training people internationally. I did a bunch of real estate investing that I alluded to before. I'm forgetting things. I hosted an internationally syndicated television show, which is not so much entrepreneurial, except for the fact that the script that they gave me just, so there's a teleprompter, it was me and one other guy. And the show was called Disc Doctors. You can find a couple of segments on YouTube, but so it's like car talk for computers. So we had a teleprompter with a script, but anytime I was supposed to say something, it would just say, "Steven, say something funny." And so basically I got to do whatever I wanted. Professional magician thing. I was doing that for quite a long time. Professional stand-up comic, which being a stand-up comic, as a job is kind of like being a telemarketer, because your gig is just constantly calling to get your next gig booked. So I literally put telemarketer on my Schedule C on my 1040 form 1 year, even though I was doing comedy and not selling life insurance or whatever else telemarketers do. I know there's other things that I'm forgetting because I don't store them in my brain. Oh, a bunch of internet marketing related businesses as well.
Well, that's fantastic. And so I'm sure the running kind of is what drew you to the shoes, but tell us about the launch of Zero Shoes.
Yeah, it was, I got back into sprinting when I was 45 after a 30-year break and was getting injured pretty much constantly. And a friend suggested that I try taking off my big, thick, padded, motion-controlled, regular running shoes to see what I learned from running in bare feet. And the experience was so amazing. The short version is what I learned was why I was getting injured for the 2 years previous. But more importantly, I learned how to naturally change my gait to something that made my injuries go away, made me faster, made me an All-American Masters All-American sprinter. And I wanted that barefoot feeling as much as I could have it, but I wanted to be able to get into restaurants and grocery stores without people getting mad at me. So I made a pair of sandals based on a 10,000-year-old design, just some rubber from a shoe repair place and cord from Home Depot to attach it to my foot. And then people kept asking me for those. So I was just doing this as a goofy little hobby. I made, I don't know, 40, 50 pairs of shoes. And then one day a guy says, "I have a book coming out on barefoot running. If you treated this sandal making hobby like a business and had a website, I'd put you in the book." So I rush home. I pitch this brilliant opportunity to my wife, who is a wonderfully smart person, who assured me that I was an idiot and it wouldn't make any money and I shouldn't waste my time. And so I'm a good husband. So I told her I wouldn't do it. And I'm a typical husband. So after she went to bed, I built a website and launched it. In fact, we had an SEO, SEM, search engine optimization, search engine marketing business that we had started right around that time. And I said, it'll be a case study, you know, just to show how you can get ranking. It'll only take me 3 months to really dominate this thing. And I was wrong. It only took me 6 weeks. And at the end of 6 weeks, we realized this was our full-time job. And more, we were already getting feedback from customers saying, "These things have changed my life." And we knew that we were onto something important about natural movement, letting your feet and body do what feet and bodies are supposed to do instead of getting in the way with padding and support and motion control and all those things that are demonstrably unnecessary. And that was a little over 11 years ago. And here we are, having grown dramatically since then.
Well, you and I met, I think it was in January at one of the JV Summit hosted, and it was wonderful to hear your story. And I teach that successful businesses do one of two things: solve a problem or serve a need. Mm. And certainly you are a quintessentially perfect example, poster child for that. And you, by doing that, your business really exploded in a very positive way. Share a little bit about your growth.
Egad. So we started on the floor of a corner of a spare bedroom and had a debate about whether we should spend $30 for a folding table to get things off the floor because the cats were sitting on everything. And then another debate about buying a second table. And then suddenly we had, you know, customer service at our dining room table and fulfillment in our living room and product in the entire house. And Lena had an office in a bedroom, spare bedroom on the second floor. I was in the basement, and we spent days where the only time we would see each other was on Skype. type, even though we were only 20 feet away from each other, literally one on top of the other. I don't remember what the revenue numbers were early on, but let's just say at a certain point we went from like, you know, 2 and change to 5 and change to 8 and change to 12 and change to 23. And, you know, things are just growing very, very quickly. I was going to say exponentially, but that's not accurate. We're still average. Well, I'd have to do the math to figure out what our compounded annual growth rate is. Suffice it to say, we've been one of the fastest growing companies in the country for the last 7 years.
And so tell us, you know, obviously it's called Zero Shoes. So I'm assuming that's the website, but share with people how they can find more information about you personally, as well as the shoes.
Personally. So you're asking to tell people how to stalk me. Is that, do I need to give out my home address and what my driving habits are?
To learn from you.
Oh, that. Oh God. If anyone learns anything from me, I've clearly made a mistake. So we're Zero Shoes, xeroshoes.com. Although if your computer auto corrects you to Zero, I now own that domain and that'll redirect. So that's okay. And then we are at Zero Shoes or /Zero Shoes, wherever you at or slash things. And then personally, I haven't kept anything really updated. I have a website that's at my name at sashin.com, but I literally don't even know what it says there because I haven't been on it or edited it in ages because I've been so busy as CEO of Zero Shoes that I don't care about my personal stuff.
Well, being a serial entrepreneur, you may not have experienced the level of fear and risk aversion that a lot of people do. So, but what would you share with someone about, you know, they have an idea and they just haven't taken that last step to make it a reality? Advice would you share with them?
Yeah, I would say throw it away and get a government job with a pension. You made a really interesting point, and that is, those of us who do this don't think what we're doing is risky, even though it's entirely possible that you could go bankrupt in any given moment and many other things could explode in your face. But it just doesn't even cross your mind as being something to pay attention to, which is actually problematic and not really the way I think, because I'm hypersensitive to risk and I'm hypersensitive to the downside of things. I don't care when someone's trying to pitch me on something. I don't care when they're talking about how much money I could possibly make. I only care about mitigating risk. What am I going to lose if it doesn't work? And is that going to be okay with me? And so that's really one thought is, you know, just work on the assumption that it's going to fail and suck and you will lose all your money, and then see if you're okay with that. And keep that in mind, because I used to talk to friends of mine who were seemingly very successful. And I say that with hesitation because that just means they had a bunch of money, but that doesn't mean the rest of their life was, you know, in good shape or anything one would want to emulate. But I instead of asking them, how'd you become successful, which is what most people do because they're looking for some reproducible formula, of which there aren't any or very, very few. In fact, I don't really think there are any, but that's a whole other story. Instead, I would ask them, how much of what you accomplished was due to things like luck and chance and fate and things that are out of your control? And they would have way more interesting stories about that, as do I. I think that where we are is predominantly the result of luck. And then on the side is, you know, busting our butts and being relatively smart. But if we didn't have the luck factor, I don't care how smart we were and how many fires we knew how to put out and how hard we worked, this wouldn't have happened the way it has. But the other thing that I asked them is, your financial picture went from like really quote unquote good, $100,000 a week, $200,000 a week or more to zero. So a couple times for some of these people, and I said, if you had to teach a college course on how to go from, you know, the top of that mountain to the bottom of the mountain on how to fail the way you did, what would you teach in that course? And again, very animated, very interesting, with things that are reproducible, that are important to know about not getting overextended, about paying attention to your competition, about looking at market forces and things that are changing in the world and not being attached to what you're doing when those things around you change unexpectedly. And that's basically all we do around here. I mean, my wife says, I have the great job. I think about all the cool things that could happen. And she has the annoying job of telling me we don't have the money to do that or preparing, you know, for what happens if it doesn't work. But she's not totally accurate because I'm very sensitive to the downside of things. And at the same time, you know, my focus is the future vision of stuff. Was that an answer?
Which it should be, because you're the entrepreneur. And I always say the fact that you have your wife that fills in that other side is the power of association, which is part of everything I teach. Yeah. And I think, you know, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. So you put yourself in the position of greatest potential and then you get lucky.
Well, I'm gonna throw this one out for the fun of it. So here's one, other than the luckiest thing of all, which is that the woman who is now my wife at some point decided I was okay to talk to. And then after years of knowing each other, she decided, okay, maybe it's worth going out with this guy. And then somehow agreed to marry me. And that was 20 something years ago. But beyond that, here's my favorite story. A friend of ours is walking his dog, which he normally didn't do. Normally his wife walked the dog. And the dog bumped into another dog that the dogs knew each other. So the dog started hanging out. So our friend started talking to the other dog walker, who was a guy walking his dogs. Normally he didn't either. Normally his wife walked the dog. So the dogs knew each other because of the wives, but this time the husbands got together. And so our friend said, what do you do? The guy said, well, I'm the head of global product design at Crocs. And our friend said, oh, my friends Steve and Elena have a shoe company, which at that point we did not have. We had a company selling do-it-yourself sandal making kits. I wouldn't call it a shoe company by any stretch of the imagination. Anyway, this guy, Dennis, hands our friend his phone number and says, have him give me a call. And I sat on that for months thinking, why would he want to talk to me? We're making do-it-yourself sandal kits. And so after a few months, I called him. We got together, had a lunch that was supposed to last for half an hour. And 4 hours later, I said, boy, I'd love to work with someone like you someday, but probably younger, just getting their feet wet. He goes, well, what about me? Because I really believe in what you're doing. I said, yeah, but we can't afford you, man. He goes, I'm retired. I said, you're hired. So the luck factor is, you know, two dogs meeting when it happened to be two guys walking the dogs. The part that you alluded to is, for whatever reason, you know, he decided to work with us, but were it not for the dogs and the insane out of my control luck of that, we wouldn't be here.
Yes. I love that. That's fantastic. So, I just love it. You're going to hang out with me. We're going to do another short recording for the private Facebook group, the Play Big Movement. So all of you watching and listening, rewind, because these are incredible nuggets of great thought-provoking concepts that you need to think about.
If I don't say something contrarian or counterintuitive, I haven't done my job.
Well, like me, you made the comment that you never had a job. Well, I'm not a very good employee. I've had a few along the way, but I realized early on that entrepreneurship, I was a little bit too much of a control freak. I like to control my schedule, my day, and my life. So employment is not on the agenda for me. So I've had the benefit of being able to find things that I felt passionate about and pull things together. And it sounds like you have too. So give us just a peek into the future of Zero Shoes. You know, I'm coming out with the book Exit Rich, which is all talking about building a business and understanding what your exit plan is. So do you have one? Is it something you're willing to share, or what's the thought?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I wonder if you deal with this in the book. I frankly don't imagine that you do, because it's something very few people talk about, which is how your exit plans are affected by your age. Is that something you dive into?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Well, I can't wait to read it. So I'm about to be 59. And so I feel like I'm going down two paths simultaneously, to be completely candid. One is that we're just trying to change the world, you know, nothing major. And what we're doing fundamentally is actually, we're not the intervention. We're not doing anything new at Zero Shoes. We're actually just going back to prior to, say, 1970, when shoe design took a sharp right turn into what you see now and has not been beneficial for anybody ever since. The injury rate for runners, 50% of runners get injured every year, 80% of marathoners get injured every year. And that hasn't changed despite the quote unquote advances in modern athletic shoe design. And so, but if you look prior to that, most footwear looked closer to what we do. Ours are significant improvements, but basically look like what we do. And if you look in the literature, you don't find a bunch of research on running related injuries, because it wasn't happening. So what we're doing is helping people rediscover that natural movement, letting your feet and body do what they're designed to do, what they've been doing quite well for as long as we've been human beings, that's the obvious, better, healthy choice, the way natural food is. And we all know this. We, you know, as kids, on a hot summer day, we'd run outside, we'd kick off our shoes, we'd feel the grass between our toes or the sand under our feet or the water around our ankles, and we just play. And you can do that now. And more, you know, you have all these nerve endings in the soles of your feet that are designed to tell your brain what's going on. So your brain can make your body do what it's supposed to do healthily, enjoyably, effectively. I hope I mentioned enjoyably, because if it isn't fun, you should be doing something different till it is. But so on the one hand, we're really trying to change the world, and we happily are. As my wife says, there's no reason to start another shoe company. There's enough of them on the planet, unless what you're doing changes people's lives. And happily, we've heard from many tens of thousands of people who say that that's what we've done. So that's the good news. The flip side is the personal financial side, where, I don't want to work for the rest of my life. And we are in an interesting business where, aside from the fact that we're competing against multi-billion-dollar companies, which I enjoy, especially because most of them have made their money by lying to people. And I find that reprehensible. And I like to try to pull that rug up from underneath people. But the bigger thing is that once you get to a certain point, a certain revenue level, a certain run rate in a footwear company, there are a number of conglomerate companies, if you will, or house of brand companies, portfolio companies, who get afraid that you're going to start doing something that's going to take money away from them, and B, see an opportunity for them to benefit by bringing you into the fold and dealing with the economy of scale they have, the improvements in production and distribution and marketing, et cetera, that they can bring to the table. So we firmly expect that in the not too distant future, one or more of those companies will approach us. They already have, actually. And we will then figure out what makes sense for both us. And we took on private equity minority partners a few months ago. So we'll have to make sure that what our goals are align with theirs. And then after that, we'll see. On the one hand, if I can be involved in a way that's doing the things I like to do without the problems of having a job, which I only imagine because I've never had one, then that would be great. But if I've said to people, if you don't think you need me, I'm not going to try and convince you. Just, come visit me on the island. And they say, well, that's a really good answer. I go, what do idiots say? They go, it's my baby. I got a vision. I go, yeah, it's our baby and we have a vision. Simultaneously, we're going to ready to sell vision impaired babies. So, it's just running down both of those paths of working on the assumption we're never going to get acquired while making sure we're prepared to have the highest value to an acquiring company at any given time.
And that's highest value within the company built, so that if you choose to sell, you can choose to sell at the highest price, but you have to do the homework and create the valuation in your company. And that's essence of Exit Rich, is to create that economic engine and identify all those value, because there's a lot of the value is intrinsic and it's intangible.
Right.
So you have to really, identify it, identify the intellectual property, protect it and leverage it, right?
Well, and in the footwear business, intellectual property has limited value. I mean, my line is valuation is in the eye of the beholder of the checkbook. They're the ones who are writing it. It's like when it's my favorite thing when I buy a car. I love negotiating to buy a car because it's my money. So they can do whatever they want, but I know how much I'm willing to spend. And if somebody doesn't want to take that money, then they don't get it. So, but similarly, when we took this to market to find the private equity partners that we had, it was very clear that there was a gap in ideas about valuation, and we were not the ones with the checkbook. So, while we didn't lose out, we certainly didn't prevail with the numbers that we were imagining. And to your point about highest valuation, to be totally candid again, I'm not even looking for the highest possible valuation, because frankly, the amount we're talking about is so much more money than Lena and I would ever need to live for the rest of our lives and a few incarnations after that, reincarnations after that. But I'm trying to provide a value for the acquiring party as well. I want both of us to feel like we got a good deal out of it, and
as any good negotiation should truly result in. Yes. Yeah. It should be a win-win all the way around. And certainly your passion of the movement can live well beyond you selling the company, obviously. Absolutely. So there's the celebrity brand, and then there's the mission brand. And so the shoe company, I'm sure will, is a living example of your movement, but you also can have that message as well. So I think that's fantastic. And I'm so delighted that you were here, and I look forward to seeing the next steps in the valuation. You do have a lot of intellectual property because you have a huge database of the people who have engaged in your mission. And that database is one of the most valuable pieces of intellectual property you could have. So
we have a lot of other IP beyond that, but the biggest one that people think about is protecting their product. And in the footwear world, that's next to impossible. In fact, there's a new shoe that Nike put out that has some design elements that are on the wall behind me that I invented and no one had ever done in the 50 years prior. And in fact, we're seeing more of that as bigger companies stealing ideas that I came up with. And I take it as a good sign.
Absolutely. And, you know, it only increases your level of authority. So it's wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And you're going to hang with me for a few minutes. And for the rest of you watching and listening to this segment, you've heard it from somebody who's lived and breathed as a serial entrepreneur his entire life, from shining shoes at a young age to creating a multi-million dollar shoe company that's related to a problem he wants to solve and a need he wants to serve. And so listen, but also absorb and see where you can find your way to play big, which is to be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. So until next time, thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.